So.
Hi.
I want to start by telling you about this dream I had the other night.
Okay, this is going to be excellent podcasting.
Well, no, because it's short, but pungent.
Okay.
It smells strange.
Yeah.
It's
like a footy cheese.
It started out, and I was a time traveler.
Okay.
And I went back to the 7th grade to help myself pass the Regents. But I was bad at it because I was just sitting next to myself at the test. But to get past the proctor, I pretended to be a mannequin. But he saw through this ruse. And I was like, well, I'm my own big brother, and I'm here to take the Regents too because I'm dumb. And he bought it, and then we passed the test. And then it gets weird. Instead of going home, I stayed at school, and Geordi LaForge was there. But okay. He was the ship's doctor. And the patient he was treating with was a woman who had a problem with her feet, some kind of disease, where the left one became sort of like shrunken and withered. Not
gross.
A lot, but a little bit of, you know, atrophy going on.
Gross.
The other one became infused with energy to become a crystal ball through which you could see all known information in the universe.
Oh.
And he was just like, I'm going to give you bed rest and also lock you into a room, because if anybody stares into your foot, they will go mad.
Okay.
And that's my dream.
Oh.
Again and again.
Okay. Every night, that's what I see. I don't know what it means.
Cool. You got
just needed to get that off your chest?
We need a cold opening, man.
On the mics?
Need a cold opening.
Okay.
So you can't put the cold opening after the intro music.
It's one of these kinds of recordings today.
Yeah.
Okay.
It's a guide-in.
I think I'm with you, because my brain's not all the way here.
So.
What's up?
I want to talk about, so did you watch season 8 of 24?
No.
Okay, so in season 8 of 24, there is a scene where Jack Bauer's going crazy.
Yes. Now, is that the one where he's been tortured by the Chinese, or the one where he's on heroin, or?
You're thinking of, I think, like season 5 and season 2, respectively.
Okay.
But what happens is, like, Jack Bauer is going crazy, and he's like, all right, gotta go kill me some Russian dignitaries. And then we cut to a commercial. When we come back, the camera just pans over, like, the Russian dignitary's room, and you see, like, the guy on the left who's got his head through the TV, the guy on the right who's just slumped against the wall and, like, you know, the streaks of blood on the wall. And then, like, through the door that's been busted off at least one of its hinges, to, like, three guys all in a pool, gunshot, and the one guy in the middle of the room with the fire poker through him.
Yeesh.
Yeah. But, like, when you think about it, that is a, like, except for the camera panning, that is a static scene. That is a scene in which no action has taken place.
Yeah.
But the scene itself is telling the story. It's like
the aftermath of violence.
Yeah, it's... I think it's why sort of like CSI has kind of gotten popular. It's kind of like puzzle solving. It's like, look at what's here, piece together the story.
And in this case, it was pretty obvious. The story was Jack Bauer murdered a bunch of dudes.
Yeah.
It's pretty often the story.
That
may be the story.
That was the story, but you can still pick up narrative in that.
Yeah.
Because it's like not only did he shoot a whole bunch of guys, but then he stabbed this guy with a fire poker. That says more about... than just killing a man. That just says you're going after this guy and you want him to know it. But it's this whole idea of like there's this separation of story. So like there's story in the sense of plot. You know, there's like, you know, a hero goes to see the king. King says, no, fuck you. Hero kills the king. Hero is the new king. Like you can say that's the plot. And that's like one level of story.
Violent.
It's an example. Then there's the idea of fluff. So that's when you get into, you know, well, the king has, you know, dignitaries who visit every fifth weekend. So even though the plot thing may be, like, using that to your advantage, the fact that that exists, the fact that that fills out the world, that's sort of, like, fluff. That's, like, background story.
Okay.
So it can do a lot to you, but it is stuff which is stumbled upon. That if you left it out, the story would be bland, but it would still be a complete story.
There would still be a narrative.
Right. And then there's also narrative in the sense of action. Like, I jumped up and I kicked the guy. like the very...
And then the hero jumped up on the throne and kicked the king in the tush!
Exactly. Because, like, it's, you know, sort of the difference of, like, just telling me that, you know, telling me that stuff is happening and that, you know, political intrigue is occurring. And then the one action scene where he punches a tiger and everything blows up. You didn't see the end of Double Team? That is the way that movie ends.
What's Double Team?
It's the Dennis Rodman and... not... the guy... The Swedish Fallhammer? Jean-Claude Van Damme. Jean-Claude Van Damme and Dennis Rodman.
He's Swedish?
No. The muscles from Brussels. That's what it is.
Okay.
Not the Swedish Fallhammer, because that means monkey. I think.
The Thought Hammer?
Fallhammer.
The Thought Hammer?
Right. And then, so, because some people are in it for, like, intrigue. Like, that's, I guess, you know, the more, I won't say feminine.
In what?
Like, it's a difference between, you know, an action movie and a, you know, like, a drama movie. Because a drama is about people and intentions, but, you know, sometimes things don't actually happen.
Mm-hmm.
Whereas in action movies, things happen all the time, but it generally doesn't matter what the meaning behind them is.
Everything around it just facilitates stuff happening.
Yeah. And, you know, I think you can get a very good movie if you're combining the two. Like, that's kind of what I see the difference between, like, Battlestar Galactica and 24 is.
Okay.
Some people were trying to sell me on that it's like Space 24, but it's not, because 24 has more action in it.
Mm.
Like there are strong characters with their own intents, and they are clashing, but in Battlestar Galactica, has sort of just a constant tension without action.
Occasional action. Occasional space fights.
But I watched through, like, 45 minutes, and nothing happened except a couple of spaceships voiped. But they voiped from space to space. Like, the state of the ships was the same.
Yeah.
They were slightly ahead, and then caught up to, and so they jumped slightly ahead. It doesn't matter where in space they are, it doesn't matter how many times they jumped, nothing changed. That's why I couldn't keep watching that show, even though everybody seems to like it. A lot of people seem to like it.
It was alright.
But then there's this level of just, of sort of, you know, crime scene investigation about walking in, or even sort of like, you know, like tracking prints or walking up and like, there's a scuffle here and like, they're walking 2x2. That's an Imperial Army thing. And or even very much like the Hondo maps, like on, I don't think it was 5 a.m. It might've been Block War. The one where like you walk into, you know, there's all these hotel rooms, but then one of them has...
one of them's all fucked up and there's like blood in the bathroom, right?
Yeah. Like that tells a story. It doesn't tell much of a story, but that is, in a sense, telling a story. It says...
action happened there.
Something happened here, and I don't know about you, but I really like that, because then I like to go back and piece things together, but also just to know that, like, it's interesting to... like, that is something which, again, sort of fills out a world.
Mm-hmm.
So I guess that's sort of, like, it's... but again, it's the difference between... it's very, very specifically based on, you know, the way a room is left, the way things happen, in contrast to the, you know, Mass Effect codex. Because here it's just like, oh, you found a radio. Now, in your menu,
what's
there's...
what's going on with that radio?
There's a 5-page description about radios in the universe and, you know, the famous radio play done by these guys, and that may be hilarious in itself, but I don't like to read. I just like walking up and seeing, like, oh, okay, so all these radios are here, and then this one is busted. I wonder what happened to bust it. Or just, and like, it's...
what I like about the idea of using setting and stuff to tell a story about, you know, the world or whatever, in your piece of fiction, in your show, your video game, is that it lets you move away from what I think is a pretty common trap, where in, like, video games and role-playing games, I know specifically for, like, tabletop games, a pretty common trap is that it seems like nothing happens without involving the player characters.
Mm-hmm.
And so, like, that in, like, role-playing games and, like, tabletop games, that's just a problem with, like, presentation, and, like, very often the world is just reactive to the players.
But you get it in, like JRPGs and stuff, too. Like, you know, literally the world is just people standing around waiting for you to talk to them most of the time.
Yeah.
But then, like, if you have these environments that have, that sort of imply action, I think it's a way to move you away from that trap. And that's why I like to see it used in video games and stuff.
Well, in the sense of an RPG, that kind of makes sense because it's essentially what you're doing is you're all together telling a story about the player characters, about the party.
Mm-hmm.
So it kind of makes sense that it's like if the world is not alive, does not have its own sort of ideas to it, then you are, then the DM is not really partaking in telling the story. They are only sort of mediating the story.
Yeah.
Which isn't necessarily bad, depends on what you're going for, but...
Yeah, I mean, it's what everyone wants.
Yeah. I think of it very much as, like, if you're... It's in, you know, in movies and in comics, there's this idea of show, don't tell.
Yeah.
A classic idea. And sort of, like, I think the reasoning behind it is this idea of taking things out of the conceptual and putting it into the tangible. Mm. And there is, you know, the problem of like, well, now you're showing too much. You don't have to show, you know, people having a coffee break, unless that's relevant to the story. Like, even if nothing happens there, showing it tells something. So that's part of the
well, I mean, if it's used well.
Yeah.
You know.
Well, that's part of the craftsmanship about it. It's like, you know, like having a coffee break says something, and also says something depending on what the mood around it is. Like, is this, you know, a coffee break between coworkers who hate each other? Is this a coffee break, you know, the morning after?
Like, is it break time? Everybody take a break?
And rat-a-tat-a-tat-a. So there's a, you know, of course you need to know how it's used, because if you're going to use it, you need to say something with it. But you don't need to say something like, you know, and now this piece of action happens. You don't need to say something like, and now we're going to explore this part of the world. You can just be saying something like, and now we're emphasizing that there's a tense moment. Or like, now we're emphasizing that everybody's really happy. Like, that's why sometimes you have a montage and there's a scene with a picnic in it, or something like that. But it's very much, you know, actually sort of showing it, having, you know, a few seconds that say something like that. And, you know, again, because I'm a visual person, I think that has a much bigger impact than saying, and then they were happy. If somebody just says, like, you know, and then there was 50 years of happiness, and then we cut back to more conflict, well, then telling me that there were 50 years of happiness and then not saying it, not showing how that was a part of the world, you have still built a world that is just, you know, full of conflict. Like, in the end, yeah. Your media, that is what it is. There was no happiness. There was this idea of happiness, but it was, you know, part of the conceptual. Like, it's almost that part of, you know, fans filling in the gaps.
Oh?
You know, okay. So there's this idea that some things are shit, but if there are a lot of people who like that and they see promise in it, then they will say, like, it's kind of shit, but they're trying to do this, and you can say this.
Oh, okay, yeah.
And, but it's, if the fans are filling in the gaps for why your thing is shit, then you have still failed, and some people think that, well, you really shouldn't, you know, get the props for making your thing, because your thing is still shit, even though there is promise in it, there is, you know, there is good things that could come out of it, what you made is still shit.
And then it got inadvertently crowdsourced to your fans, and they filled it in. Blah.
I mean, that's kind of like, you know, that seems to be happening a lot with Homestuck. Because, like, Homestuck is pretty great on its own, but there's a lot of stuff that, you know, fans will call, and it's basically, you know, sometimes it's fan fiction, sometimes it's, you know, just fans elaborating. It's like if somebody came and wrote more, in Mass Effect they had, you know, the Elcor review of Shakespeare. And the Elcor are the ones who say the intonation of whatever they're saying because they can't actually put the tone in.
Mm-hmm.
It's kind of like, you know, if that's a great idea, but then they don't actually do that, well, then if, you know, fans come in and they do the overdub on it, well, then, like, yes, that is a great idea. The people who came up with it didn't do it. They really shouldn't get all the credit for it. It's, you know, taking the conceptual and making it into the tangible. The tangible is... Doing stuff is harder than thinking about stuff.
Yes.
So, you know,
ideas are a dime a dozen.
Yeah, so if you put a block of text full of ideas, that's still not as good as sort of realizing it and making it tangible.
Yeah,
and how you make it tangible is different. For movies, you can just show it. For video games, you make it interactive.
Or again, you just show it. Like, you use you know, when you originally brought up this topic to me, you put it under the guise of using level design to tell a story.
Which I do want to get back to that. This is kind of diverging.
Okay.
But I really like Lost Planet 2, and I realize this is actually a bit of a lot of Capcom games, but, like, in the opening scene for Lost Planet 2, everything that they do, you can do as a player.
Oh, yeah.
And in the sense of video games, a sort of thing, like, sometimes showing a cutscene where something cool happens, but then you can't do that cool thing.
Yeah.
Like, you cannot be in control of it. That is bad, you know. And that's the thing.
And, like, lots of things are guilty of that, from, like, you know, Final Fantasy to Devil May Cry.
Yeah. But you gotta give it a hand. Like, a lot of things, but like, in Lost Planet 2, like, they're riding on the backs of things, shooting them, they're picking up guns, they're riding in mechs. That is all stuff the players is capable of doing.
Yeah, because, like, you know, that opening kind of serves two purposes of, like, you know, they have the narration of, like, you know, it's year whatever, whatever, of the after colony era and stuff, but it's also showing you, like, look, you can fire your grapple onto the back of that thing, and then you can fire your machine gun right into its butt, and you can do the grenade trick, too.
Yeah. So, but it's cool, because they don't use anything that the player can't do, and on the reverse of that, it's sort of, it's giving the player ideas.
Mm.
And it's not a game where you have to sort of expect, like, well, I'm going to watch something cool, then I'm going to play something kind of crappy. It's, I'm going to watch something cool, and then everything cool that they did, I can go and try out.
Mm.
And that's, we didn't mention it last time, but that's something that Lost Planet should get a lot of props for. Back to this idea of just level design. Like, specifically level design.
Okay.
Because, you know, talk about, like, the Hondo maps. Because he does that a lot. Like, he'll have, you know, some broken signs, he'll have some boarded up doors, the whole Hergedleon. Like, that's kind of that. Like, I'm trying to remember, like, because there is a story behind Hergedleon about, like, they found it, but then you have to shoot it to block it off from, like, there is, like, an actual blurb of text somewhere that goes into some of the background about it, like, being at the center of the universe, but at the same time, when...
Should we maybe preface by saying that Hondo was a mapper who made maps for Action Half-Life?
He did Action Half-Life, he did a couple for Quake, I think, and I don't know... There's one map which I don't know if it was made specifically for Svenkoop, but it was eventually turned into a map for that.
Okay.
It was very hard.
And he put very elaborate Easter eggs throughout his maps that, you know, puzzle solving, platforming, hidden shit, with this sort of weird underlying narrative about the Hergedleon.
Yeah. Well, I think that
which was this giant eye thing.
That sort of controlled the fabric of the universe. Well, I think those only existed in Endless Rain and No Credit.
Mm-hmm.
But he did do that in a lot in other maps. Like in...
5 a.m., was it?
In 5 a.m., he had the whole clock thing, which that was a very intricate... people still will, like... meet up and get, like, 20 people just to explore these Easter eggs and try to get to the end. They're very in-depth. But I'm thinking of Endless Rain 2, that sort of that office area,
mm-hmm.
where there's, like, you know, the guy's desk, and everything on it is exploded, and then there's a trail of blood that leads into another guy's office, where there's another mess of blood, and then it leads up into the vent.
Mm-hmm.
Like, that's...
Something weird happened there.
Yeah. And, you know, that's something that sort of sets the scene. Because even you can read the blurb of text about, like, you know, people started disappearing in floor circa 2000. But at the same time, you see something like that, and you're just like, oh, shit's going bad. And although the specific, you know, the specific story, the narrative, the idea may not get across, the theme certainly gets across. And you can still pick up on these things, and the experience is not entirely dissimilar from what the creative intent was. But not just that, there's sort of the more vague sense about just the way that levels are laid out. I was talking with Jesse and Brian yesterday, and they were telling me how they've picked up on the level design of a lot of Modern Warfare maps.
Okay.
And about how that game is basically designed as a large system of hallways, and basically with the idea in mind that as soon as you have two people who communicate, and sort of watch both points and of a choke point. Like, it's just a series of choke points. So if you have two people who can watch both sides of a choke point, they can annihilate everybody else on the map.
Yeah.
But then again, that kind of works for that game, because they want to say, you know, have people work together, kind of. People don't, but maybe that's what they want to say. Maybe they don't. I don't like Modern Warfare. but again, like, just in, like, geometry and shapes of a level. Like getting past, you know, getting past Streaks of Blood, getting past Fight Beetles, getting past all of that.
Oh, Fight Beetles, though.
I know. But that's...
Neo Tokyo does have that.
Exactly.
To a pretty big extent. I didn't even think of Neo Tokyo when you brought this up.
Mm. But yeah, no, Neo Tokyo does... Because, like, you look around, you look at the different... I like Neo Tokyo for that, I'm not sure which map it is, but where, like, you start on the roof... And then you can go down, and there's, like, the office section, and there's, like, one laboratory section, and then there's the warehouse section.
Rise.
Like, I really like Rise. Because there's a lot of different, like, sections in that map.
Yeah.
And they don't do it to quite as much an extent, but they're very good at putting details that make the map feel alive and lived in.
Mm.
Or maybe not lived in, but, like, it feels like functional space. Like, this was not designed, like, although, like, you know... Again, sort of shape-wise, this is not the way you would design a building, but, like, it looks like it's functional. Like, there are computers everywhere, there's vending machines, there's office chairs, and although the shape is for a video game level, it looks well.
Mm.
But that's the thing, the shape itself can tell you a lot about saying, like, it can say a lot, and you can use it to very powerfully affect gameplay. Like, I think people usually don't give that enough credit. Because you look at the way Modern Warfare maps are. Compare that to the way that, like, Team Fortress 2 maps are. Compare that to how Quake 3 maps are. Quake 3 maps are very strange.
Like, yeah, they are.
Like, I don't think I've ever seen maps quite like those outside of Quake 2 and Quake 3.
They kind of remind me of, like, Unreal as well, to a certain extent.
That's true. Unreal. The maps in Unreal 2K4 are still some of, like, my favorite maps. That one map where it's kind of just, like, a big agricultural, like, garden complex. But, like, it's all, like, orange and browns and green plants everywhere. And, like, the one section where it's, like, a big downwards L ramp
with
skylight. Yeah. Like, that's one of my favorite maps just because it's got a very cohesive theme to it. It's got, you know, it's got the plant, it's got the lighting, it's got... And it's good shapes, and they're interesting. Like, they have some verticality to the maps, they have long stretches. Unreal Tournament, I think, has a very good sort of, you know, gameplay variations to the maps.
Yeah, definitely, because, like, you have the indoor arenas and everything, and then you have, you know, Torlan and shit.
Yeah. So, but where, you know...
Hyperblast.
Like even inside the maps. Like, Deck 17 has a couple of very different... Well, Deck 17 is, like, a lot of long stretches. There's some maps that just have variances in... Like, when I'm designing a map, I think of them as, like, conflict zones.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, here's going to be a room, and people are going to approach it from these hallways, and this is sort of where the axis of fire is going to be.
Mm-hmm.
And looking at it that way, like, within a certain map, different conflict zones have wildly different, like, heat maps, patterns to them about how fights will take place in them.
Mm.
Whereas something like Modern Warfare... Every map is full of choke points.
Yeah.
The only one maybe that's not that is that one railroad map. Because it has like...
Oh, in Modern Warfare 2?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Because then, you know, there's like the long stretches when you're on the ground.
There's a lot of open areas with like windows over them and shit.
Yeah. Because there's a lot of tight spaces inside the buildings. And then if you aren't fighting into tight spaces, you can look out the window and it's sort of sniper heaven. And that's the way that I like to think about it. Like, you say, okay, well, what kind of fights do I want people to have here? And you can design that.
And then you zone that out.
Yeah.
Actually, I don't know how much of it is, like, so tightly controlled, but I see that a lot of times in APB.
Mm.
When, like, I'm playing with my criminal, and, like, the first weapon I got was the automatic shotgun. Because I was like, let's try something new. And, like, there were a lot of situations where I'm like, yes, this is perfect. And then there are a lot of other situations where I'm just like, no, this is terrible. Now I have to switch to my rifle.
Well, that's sort of the interesting part of APB, because their maps is just the whole district,
mm-hmm.
Which is sort of a harder a harder thing to do.
Especially when, like, for a given mission, objectives are just kind of procedurally placed in certain areas. They're not always discreetly assigned to the same location. But it seems like they do place them in, like, areas that have that same sort of consideration that you're taking into account with, like, you know, well, what sort of, you know, encounter is going to happen here? Like, is this area, you know, is it the center of a parking lot that's flanked by buildings? So, you know, we're going to have this sort of, you know, long-range sniper cover potential, or is it going to be, you know, this tunnel under a parking garage? So it's like, you know, you have to burst into that really small area where you're going to have really intense close combat sort of things.
Well, there's like three places that stand out to me when I think of like fights in APB.
Mm-hmm.
It's that one warehouse near the boat.
Okay.
And kind of the boat itself, though there haven't been too many fights on the boat. I think I've only been in one fight on the boat.
Yeah, and I don't think I've ever seen objectives placed there, but a lot of times, like, people will just run into each other there.
But, like, those warehouses near the boat especially, because it's two big doors, and then if you manage to get inside without getting shot...
Then there's,
like,
catwalks and everything.
Yeah, there's a lower level and a balcony. And there's that one spot where we were fighting Chris Angus, where it's, like, the two balconies on two... Like, it's in between all the buildings.
Oh, yeah, with the two balconies on either side.
Right. But, again, that's sort of, like, an open area with a few ways in and a balcony.
So, like, pointing, you know, as a defender of that area going out, like, you have this sort of wide area that you're firing into, but, like, once anyone breaches that perimeter, it's a very different situation all of a sudden.
Yeah. And then that mall that they have.
Oh, yeah, the mall with the multi-level.
Yeah, because that, again, is sort of, like, areas and balconies, but it's kind of just, like, stacked areas with balconies. Mm. Like, this balcony has a balcony of its own. Aside from that, if a fight takes place, it's kind of just on the street, maybe... Mm. A lot of places that they put points around are lower buildings, so that way you can get on the roofs of them.
Mm.
Or it's, like, all taking place on a building. There's one building in the financial district that has, like, two or three ladders going all the way up it, but then once you get on the top, it's kind of just a big area with cover. So they did do a couple of little points like that, but overall, think about it, like, there aren't too many places with balconies with really complex geometry.
Yeah, there isn't really, like, it's mostly just, you know, you have streets and you have buildings.
Yeah.
You know, you usually have to break into the doors or windows of buildings.
But even then, like, some of the ways that they play streets actually kind of, like, make sense. Like, they've done it on a more macro level.
Mm.
So, like, the streets that won the drainage section that we were playing hide and seek in.
Yeah.
Like, you can go there and traverse across the city. But, like, you know, people don't really fight and build. Like, I stumbled across...
Yeah, fights very rarely take place indoors.
Yeah, because, like, the only really indoor places are the places where you go to buy stuff.
Mm.
So, and, like, there aren't too many other indoors anyway, unless you count them all.
Yeah, it's mostly just, like, hallways through buildings.
Yeah. So, they've actually done pretty well on that. And there are a couple of good park areas, which are just, like, not exactly balconies, but, you know, multi-tiered heights. So, they don't have much difference. But they're pretty good at placing them around and making each one subtly different from each other. But overall, that's kind of what you get. You kind of get open area, balcony.
Yeah.
It's surrounded by buildings. Not surrounded by buildings. Well, surrounded by buildings unless you're on the waterfront by the boat. In which case, you're in a warehouse. So.
Or a boat.
Yeah. But even... Neo Tokyo.
Mm-hmm.
Neo Tokyo doesn't really have much... Like, when I'm dead, which happens a lot, and I'm just sort of looking around at level geometry, they just have a lot of sort of square hallways.
Yeah.
And what they focus more on is about sort of the way that, you know, stairwells going up and down and just where hallways interconnect and where the big areas are.
And lines of vision as well. I'm thinking of Shrine in particular.
Mm.
Dawn or Dusk.
Okay.
Which is, it takes place in a shrine, but it's not the map shrine. Durr. It's a lot of these courtyards with multiple entries. There's one in particular that has, you can climb a fence to get onto this upper wall into it. There are two entries on one side, the T-junction and whatever the other one is called, and then there's the entry into this parking garage. So you have four entries into this area, but none of them all have direct line of sight to all the other ones, because it's broken up. There's this pagoda in the center, And then there's this raised terrace with, like, all these bamboo things that kind of covers the, like, the climbing entrance. So, like, it is, you know, it's a big area with multiple openings and everything. But the way that, not even just the geometry, but just the lines of vision that you have are broken up kind of guide how conflicts there go down.
Which works perfectly into the gameplay, because then one person had the ghost, and they don't need light of sight anymore. They just tell other people which line of sight they should pick to expect people coming up. And that's the thing, like, that game doesn't have a lot of verticality. Like, a lot of Unreal maps have a lot of verticality. Like,
certain maps more than others.
You need to look up, but, you know, I'm thinking in, like, I guess it's Dusk. But that map has a lot of good. The one with
Dusk? No, that...
The one you were just talking about.
Yeah, Dawn or Dusk. Dawn or Dusk. It's two maps with the same geometry. It's just slightly darker sometimes.
Okay, I never noticed. But, like, that one has pretty good because of what you were just talking about. The one that's, like, the on the snowfield, where it's kind of just a sniper alley. Like, that's the same kind of thing. But, it's again, like, no verticality. It's all about which side of the house are you looking out. And then you get inside the house and you kind of take care of that.
Yeah, and even there it has the same sort of broken up line of sight thing. Because, like, there are these, they're like shacks out in the snowfield. And then these, like, stone walls by the main building and everything.
I'm thinking again about Rise. That one sort of has verticality only because there's that one section where you can look down to the other person's spawn point.
Yeah, you can, the glass bridge.
Yeah. Which, that one is actually really strange for that map.
Yeah.
Like, that sticks out to me the most, is, like, the most, like...
That's kind of like a gimmick on that map.
Yeah. And that's the thing, like, a lot of maps don't have... Like, because they have the whole, if you're a recon, you can fit into smaller places.
Mm-hmm.
But I never really see that used all that much.
There's a couple on Rise.
There is a couple on Rise.
There's, I think it's...
The one with the subway.
Yes, that one.
And that was cool, because that also feels right to Cali, because now you're in a small space. And you're really open directly across... But also, you're like completely, you have a pretty good line of sight on the hole underneath that.
And it's one of the custom maps. I think it's either Piss Alley or Red Light. It's not the like confined dark spaces. It's there are certain vertical areas that you can only get to as a recon.
I think that might be Red Light. Red Light was actually a pretty good map.
Yeah.
It's a lot of hallways, a lot of cover, but then every once in a while there's just like a balcony.
Wait. Actually, a lot of people really rag on Red Light. It might not be that great. I don't know. I haven't played it in a long time.
Yeah,
it does have Ultraman tits on it, though.
It has a lot of tits on it. Maybe that's what I'm thinking of. Less than the level design.
But between the two of them, Piss Alley is probably the better map. Although it does have that one huge choke point.
And, but also, like, I think back to Counter-Strike. Because Counter-Strike was, you know, very blatant, where there's a spawn point, and then it says, to A, to B. And then if you go to B, it'll say, like, to A, to C. So, and again, that happens in, you know, sort of Team Fortress 2, but it's very, like, it's saying, it's giving you a lot of clarity to the way that the map is structured. You don't have to, like, wait and figure out that, you know, oh, well, if I take this staircase, I can get here, but if I go this way, then I'll go down here, and I can approach it from this angle. You don't really get that. You go, like, well, do I go to A or do I go to B?
Yeah, and really, like, the only maps I ever remember playing were, of course, like, you know, DE Dust and DE Dust 2.
Yeah.
Which were... Those maps are fucking boring.
Yeah. But they do have this idea of, like, it's not... It's sort of about... Not so much, you know, line of sight visibility, but about which doorway are they going to come through. Like, there are some conflict zones, and each of them have at least three entrances.
Yeah.
Which is pretty nice, because that sort of gives a choice. Like, well, I can say I'm going to go here, but then I'm vulnerable to this one. And then also, do I just pick a spot and then look behind me?
Well, that's the same sort of thing we were just talking about with, like, Modern Warfare, although in this case, I think Counter-Strike, oddly enough, you have a better chance of actual coordination between people.
Because Modern Warfare is built, like, if you sit on a choke point, you can do well with, like, two people.
Yeah.
Whereas in Counter-Strike, as long as you aren't, like, super awesome and can just headshot everybody, which, by this point, I bet everyone is, who plays still, you kind of need, like, even to hold one point, you might need, like, two people.
Uh-huh.
Or, like, to hold one direction. especially when you consider those games are a lot alike.
Yeah,
that explains a bit. I never put those two like in the same thought to realize how much alike they are. I'm trying to think of what the differences are, and I think it's Iron Sights.
Yeah, and you know,
and perks,
and like if you're
and kill streaks.
Deathmatch is, you know, the default in Modern Warfare usually, and then like, you know, team deathmatch wave sort of thing.
Yeah, but I don't know. The majority of Counter-Strike matches ended because one team was entirely dead.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, less respawning, I guess, but.
Oh.
Yeah. I mean, that's. I really like doing level design. Because there's a lot of ways that you can approach it. There's a lot of things you can do with it. You can say, do I want to tell a story with what's here? Do I want to create a very effective, like, area? Because sometimes I'll go in and I'll think, like, okay, I want this conflict zone. Like, I want a box here, and I want ramps this way, and there's going to be a platform that's open from these sides, but there's going to be, like, a hatch so you can look down here without getting attacked too hard, and I think of it that way. Sometimes I think of it like, well, I want a place that has a giant glass skylight and some glowy bars on the walls. And like, okay, well, this time I just want to make this building and use these shapes. And sometimes we're just like, well, I want to make a building. Like, I've used, you know, the first thing I made in the Unreal Editor was I made my house,
mm-hmm.
which makes for a pretty poor map.
Yeah.
But it was there, and I did it, and it's like even
it was
just
a good exercise.
Yeah, like even just doing that makes me realize, wow, you can't always use real. But it's also weird because then I go back and I think of like other. I think of places I've been in the real world, and I'm like, man, this would make a pretty good Quake map.
Yeah, I'm thinking of back at our high school, there was by the new gym, there's that big ramp and stuff,
yeah.
And for some reason that area sticks out in my mind as a good gamey area.
I made the high school in Unreal once,
yeah,
and that was a pretty good area. Like, the new gym is the only thing that I actually went back and textured and lit. Because I just made it set up for dodgeball. There was a rocket launcher in the middle and a whole bunch of rocket packs along the middle line and spawn points along the edges. And then somebody made Dodgeball Source.
Yeah.
Which was pretty fun.
God. Yeah, it was.
Yeah. I tried to explain it to somebody once. They were not enthused about it. Thinking about it now, I'm not surprised they weren't enthused.
Because
even in explaining it, it's like, you play dodgeball in the Source engine. And then there's also that part where, like, they drop barrels onto it. So you hit barrels with dodgeballs and then people explode instead of just getting out. Why was that game fun?
I don't know. Was Source Force good? I don't remember.
Source Force.
I think it was interesting, but people were kind of dickish.
Yeah, like, it was interesting, it was pretty good, but there weren't too many ways to break it, because, like, every piece was breakable. I think.
Yeah.
I think it was pretty good.
Oh, okay.
But it was one of those things where, like, it was hard, because, you know, full 3D, which exact way do you want to orient this? Which way do we build a ramp so that we can jump
and
up?
And because, like, you know, you only had the grav gun. You didn't actually have good directional control.
Yeah. But that's why I wish.
This gun exists. Put it in the game.
That's why I wish that Ace of Spades actually had, like, a HUD and an interface.
I wish I could play Ace of Spades.
Yeah.
Like, I tried many, many times, and I could never connect to a server.
I got into a server, like, once. I was just sort of walking around, and there are invisible walls around the map, and just kind of like, well, what you have here would probably be great, except it doesn't look good, I can't tell what's going on, and that's enough to make me stop playing. It's not worth it to put the energy in. Then I could just go play Battlefield and then go play Minecraft, and they don't need to be together.
Because, again, you are a very visual person.
Yeah.
I'm looking at you right now.
Yeah. I'm looking at everything. I can see forever young. I want to see forever young.
Oh, gosh. Okay.
But yeah, I mean, I
level design. Think about it.
And, you know, these are my thoughts. These are what's going in. And I would like to have people give me feedback on the maps I've made. Because I've had a bunch, but I think they're kind of still just sitting on my computer. Because
I've got you, too. We can load it up sometime.
Yeah, I know.
Send me those maps. Put them in the Dropbox.
Oh, yeah, we have a Dropbox. Alright.
Alright, the Elite Consumers Podcast. You can find us online and stuff. Twitter, Facebook, iTunes. Send us email. What? Bye.
It's just kind of a constant.
Motherfuck.
325. That's Jesse, isn't it?
Yes.
Hello. Yeah. He is. Sure, hang on a second. He wants to talk to you.
Hello?
There's something you need to know about our friend Jesse. He is some sort of friend-tracking master.
I know.
He has found us at stores. He has found us in basements. We could be on the other side of the planet, and he would just roll up. I don't even know how he does it.
No, I told her last night that I'd see her there. We talked about it.
Some sort of mastery. Unbeknownst to mankind.
Okay.
He
okay,
is
thank you.
The friend tracker.
Take it easy.
He's Jesse.
Oh. That was our friend, the friend tracker, I guess.
Tracker.
Calling to tell me that my boss called him to tell me to come to the meeting that I told her I was going to come to last night.
Okay. Just...
I don't work in an office or anything. If you heard, if, you know, me talking to my boss about coming to the meeting gave you that idea, I work in a cafe, which makes this whole thing...
more ridiculous.
Just so much more ridiculous.
Like, the business world is ridiculous in itself, but that is more ridiculous.
So, Battlestar Galactica...